Hey, Mason. Did you know that on July 1st, Yahoo domain renewal pricing increased to $34.95 per year?
$34.95 per year? No way! Ridiculous! That's not a deal at all!
You're right, it's not, and I do need a deal.
You need a deal? I got the deal you need, Andy! Check this out. Transfer your domain to GoDaddy for as little as $6.99 and get a free one-year extension plus guaranteed renewal pricing. GoDaddy.com makes transferring easy and offers loads of extras, including hosting, a 5-page site builder, and much more. Oh, yeah! Plus, as a listener of MuggleCast, enter code MUGGLE, that's M-U-G-G-L-E, when you check out, and save an additional 10% on any order. Some restrictions do apply. I want you to see the site for the details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
This is Professor McGonagall welcoming you all to MuggleCast, hoping you enjoyed. Dobby, come here. Dobby!
Yes, well, I'd just like to say how very pleased I am to introduce MuggleCast to all of you. Thank you.
Because how could we not have an episode on Halloween? This is MuggleCast episode 161 for October 31st, 2008. All right, we're here for MuggleCast episode 160. Elisa's here. Good morning, Elisa.
Thanks. Good morning.
Laura's here. Good afternoon, Laura.
Thank you.
And Mike is here. Hi, Micah.
Well, I don't get good evening.
Wow, good you evening, sounded Micah. So unhappy about that.
Well, I don't get good evening.
Hey, Micah.
And also here, joining me in the MuggleCast studio, it's been a while, Ben Shane.
Hey, everybody. I'm back. I'm live here in Southern California. I'm out of school this week. Came out to see Andrew.
What do you think of the MuggleCast studios?
It's very impressive. He has a very nice setup here. I got a real microphone. I feel like I'm doing a radio show right now or something.
Ben required that I deepen his voice prior to recording.
No, whatever. he was trying to deepen his because he got jealous of my voice.
I thought there was too much of a contrast, so we had to deepen voices. Anyway, so now we're good. We got our EQ set. We got a lot to get to this week. This is our Halloween-themed show. We got some Halloween stuff going on for everyone this week. And a lot more. So I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Ben Shane.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I'm Micah Tannebell.
And I'm Elisa Montfort.
All right, Micah, what is in the news this week?
There's not a whole lot in the news this week, Andrew. And in fact, it's kind of
so
disappointing.
It really is.
But I guess one of the things that we could talk about was that Scholastic allowed their employees to do a little bit more of an in-depth interview and give away some of the secrets behind the Harry Potter series in terms of how everything gets put together. And we have three questions here that some of the people over at Scholastic were willing to answer, and I guess we'll go through all three of them. Do you want me to take the first one, or do you want to go ahead?
Sure, go ahead. These were interesting because it sort of came out of the blue. I don't know if like Scholastic was like, oh, it's a really slow time in news. I guess maybe we should do something.
Yeah.
We should contribute for once.
Maybe they just wanted to one-up Warner Brothers since Warner Brothers, you know, took the movie away. So they decided we'll give people some inside information on the Harry Potter series.
What a great replacement for the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they do what they can. I mean, they can only do so much. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So I'll read the first question. It was from Rachel Kuhn, director of marketing. She said, in your opinion, what has been the best idea for marketing Harry Potter? And she wrote, the most brilliant idea came from Joe Rowling. For Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, Joe wanted to make sure that every fan had the opportunity to read the book at the same time. Strict on-sale date was established. This date is what led to the midnight parties and the unified celebration worldwide. And that was pretty interesting because, you know, to think that it was actually Joe's idea to, you know, put the books on sale at the same time so you could have that sort of big celebration, which has really defined the Harry Potter fandom.
Yeah, you know, that everyone, when people think of Harry Potter, they think of lining up outside your local bookstore at midnight and kids dressed in robes and stuff.
Yeah. And now all the books do it. The Twilight, Aragon, there's all these big series.
Well, it's just a great thing because those are the moments you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Next question comes from David Saylor, a creative publisher at Scholastic. Each book has a different dominant color. How did you decide what which color would be good for each book?
This is David answering.
David answering, my bad. For most of the books, I had a color scheme in mind based on something that came through in the story. For example, on Harry Potter and Order of the Phoenix and Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, there were specific scenes in the book that dictated the color palette that Mary and I wanted to use. Because J.K. Rowling's descriptions are so clear and easily imagined, it wasn't hard to come up with a color scheme. And from the beginning, the palette of the books was based on the jewel tones of Mary's artwork. Ruby reds, deep amethyst purple, dark sapphires, and emeralds.
Mm. And I thought the cover stuff was some of the most interesting because there's a lot involved in deciding these covers. There's nothing much to really say with these, is there?
Yeah. Well, the first one was worth talking about.
Yeah.
What about this last one? Andrew, you read it. Come on, dude.
All right. And the last one was also to David Saylor. It said, the covers changed a lot from Sorcerer's Stone to Deathly Hallows. Was that a conscious decision? If so, why? And this is something I always wondered because they went from the multicolored covers to the one color and then back to multiple colors. And he said the biggest change in covers came from Order of the Phoenix, where Mary and I thought that a more monochromic look was good for the book based on a particular scene in a revolving room that emphasized the blue candlelight glowing all around Harry. This was also the first book where it felt that Harry was truly growing into the man he would become. He was feeling angry for various good reasons, and the tone of the book began to get more intense. If it felt like a shift in the cover was the right thing to do, it felt like a shift in the cover was the right thing to do for Order of the Phoenix.
Man, after that, I don't even need to see the movie anymore.
you think they, like, nobody ever, like, complained or anything, but it was such a huge change. I mean, the series, just how the series had the multiple colors, and then they went to that one.
Yeah.
I would almost think that must have been a hard decision to make, because then the covers don't match.
I think people ultimately care more about the content and what's inside the book than what's on the cover. But that's just my opinion.
There was a lot of discussion sparked when that cover came out.
Really?
Yeah, I remember just like, I mean, this was before I worked on MuggleNet, but I remember reading the comments and people were going crazy, like wondering what this meant. So it was definitely a pretty big thing for people. Yeah.
Well, we don't overanalyze.
It's close to cutting back. It's probably cheaper for them to print and, you know, same color palette.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they were doing.
God, these people, all they ever think about is money.
Those cheapos.
Andrew's onto it.
So that was really it. There's a lot more. It was kind of funny in these interviews, the same questions were asked pretty much of each person, and they always asked the question, did you get to read the book early? And like 4 out of 6 said, oh no, nobody can read them early. But there's like 2 people who were like, yeah, I got to read it early.
Yeah. they probably, now they're going to be sued.
It looks kind of weird. Kind of looks strange.
It's kind of shady. Because I bet some of them were like, oh, we're not supposed to say that, I don't think.
Yeah.
The other ones,
yeah.
We broke the embargo. Oh, no.
So that was really it. There wasn't much other news to discuss this week.
Yep.
Sorry to say. Isn't that
right,
Micah?
Very, very slow, I would say, over the last couple of weeks. It's just little things here and there, but nothing worth talking about, unfortunately.
Doesn't it seem unreal now that Half-Blood Prince would have been released in just a month?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, for sure.
It would have been a lot busier.
You know what I mean?
A lot busier.
Like we'd be getting ready for a premiere.
There'd be more than just the one short trailer.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many pictures have been released?
Thousands at this point.
Well, all these, too many.
Too many?
Yeah. Well, because like from all the sticker books and all that, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, no, I've seen a lot. I was wondering if it was a lot.
I saw you have a folder. You're collecting them all. You just browse through them when you're bored.
Yeah, I hear Mike is actually like papering his walls with all these Half-Blood Prince pictures. He loves them so much.
Is that true, no. Micah?
Maybe a little bit.
God, you couldn't even play along with me.
No, absolutely not.
Well, thank you, Micah, for that news. Hey, speaking of Micah, Ben, would you like to do the honors of our first announcement?
This is such a wonderful announcement. I'm very happy to make. Micah Tannenbaum joined MuggleCast back in 2005. And initially, you started off just transcribing, right, Micah?
Yep.
And then you started doing the news, and then he moved over to helping on the main site, and he's been around quite a while now, and he has now earned the status of senior staff at MuggleNet. So congratulations, Micah.
Congratulations.
Congratulations,
we are
Micah.
Also proud of you.
Senior staff member.
He's earned it, folks.
Ben, I heard you were really excited about this, too. Andrew was telling me about your email.
I had to check with the senior staff to make sure this was a good decision. And what did you write?
I wrote that I strongly support this decision.
I strongly support this decision.
Because Micah is the man.
Then Jamie came to me and said, I can't believe he said it like that. He's trying to be so businesslike.
I miss Jamie.
I'm looking at my first email from Micah. It was first transcript he sent to me. Dated August 14th, 2005. So.
Wow.
Congrats, Micah.
Too many typos.
Over 3 years ago. That's
too many typos.
Just kidding, Micah. Yeah.
What'd you say?
Micah, I said your first transcript had a lot of typos, but I was kidding. But
Micah,
I have a question. When you first started transcribing, was it hard for you? Like, how long did it take you to differentiate between the voices? Was there any two that like confused you or anything like that?
Well, I think the thing to keep in mind was back then it was only three people.
I forgot about that.
And maybe you and Kevin a little bit. Andrew definitely
was
easy to differentiate. Well, I guess by saying Andrew was easy to differentiate, he had a higher pitched voice than you or Kevin. So,
well, thank you.
I miss Kevin. When's the last time Kevin's been on our episode?
A few weeks ago, about a month or two. All right. So moving along, we have another exciting announcement, and that's that MuggleCast will be at Azcatraz 2009. We are going to be doing a special podcast event. So here's what's happening. The movie comes out the 17th. Azcatraz starts on the 18th. So this worked out beautifully for Azcatraz. So what they're going to be doing is having a midnight viewing of Half-Blood Prince on July 17th. Night of the 16th, but the 17th. And then immediately following the movie, the first time all these Harry Potter fans are seeing the movie, so it's going to be really exciting, we are going to be doing a post Half-Blood Prince live podcast where we discuss the film.
Yeah.
So
it's gonna be so fun.
It sounds actually quite exciting.
Because this midnight viewing is gonna be with diehard Harry, like when you go to midnight viewings, they're pretty diehard fans, but midnight viewing at a Harry Potter convention, that's a whole new level.
That's just pure madness.
Yeah. And magic. More details will be announced about that soon, but for now, we do recommend you sign up. You register for Azcatraz. It's going to be a great event. It's in San Francisco. Ben and I were talking about it yesterday. Ben will be there. Everyone will be there.
Is it?
it's July 18th.
Oh, July 18th. Okay, that's when the movie comes out.
17th.
They pushed it back.
Right, right.
Do you want to talk about that? Isn't that new?
It's a little odd, yeah.
Darn. I'm kidding.
But, so sign up for Azcatraz, hpef2009.org, I believe is the URL.
So can we tell them where the podcast is happening?
We don't know yet.
Oh, we're not doing it on Alcatraz? Why not? Let's make a petition for
may be doing something on Alcatraz.
I heard there might be like a Wizard Rock on Alcatraz.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I don't know if they've announced that.
Is that inside information?
That is. So to register, you go to hp2009.org, and then they have links there to register. In the referral area where it says, how do you hear about us? Put MuggleNet or MuggleCast. That's really important so they know where you came from. So thank you for that.
The Ministry of Magic elections are still rolling along. I think we completed our first primary this past week, and Hermione absolutely destroyed the competition.
Question: do you really think she's old enough? Do you think she has the experience?
I think that what we're trying to tell people is that you're voting for Hermione today. So how old would she be? Like young 20s, right?
No, 20s? Late 20s.
Late 20s. Okay, so yeah.
All right. Yeah. But does she have the experience?
She may.
She may.
I think she does.
Is who else is running against her?
It was Hermione versus Lucius, and Hermione won by, what was it, 91%?
Yeah.
So, that's like...
Which is weird, because Lucius had won the round before, so...
Who did he beat?
Who did he beat, Micah?
He beat Dolores Umbridge, which wasn't much competition, obviously.
Yeah, I guess not.
Oh, yeah, wow.
But Hermione took out Harry in her first round with, you know, a pretty high percentage of the vote.
Yeah, I was surprised about that.
Oh, really?
No,
that's interesting. I thought people would have been all, Harry's the man.
The closest tie so far has been between Kingsley and Minerva. Kingsley won with 55%. So that was a tight race.
Yeah, not really. 10% margin is pretty big.
I guess. But compared to the other ones where it's 80%, 75, 91.
So who is it then this week? It's going to be Kingsley against...
Versus Molly.
So are we having our real election November 4?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the general election?
Yep.
Also, I just want to do a quick update on Teddy Bears for Hope. I think we raised around $1,500 or $1,600 for this, which translated into about a little over 300 bears. And we started getting them out to a number of different places. We've sent out, as of right now, about 110. So we still have plenty left. And we're looking into places that they can go out to. The first batch of 30 went to the American Red Cross in Syracuse, New York. And the next 30 went to, I had to look up actually what this stood for, which is the International Medical Equipment Collaborative.
Nice.
Care of the International Relief and Development section of that organization. Basically what that means is that it goes to overseas orphanages, particularly this one, which is based out of North Andover, Massachusetts, is most likely going to go to Iraq. Orphanages in Iraq. 30 will go out there. And then 50 went to the Hudson County Child Advocacy Center in Jersey City, New Jersey.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
so it is.
We hope with some of these places we can get some pictures and things like that so we can post it on the site and show that the money actually went to a worthwhile cause. And we still have plenty more, probably around 200, that we need to find places for. But it's been a tremendous success up to this point.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Good work, Micah. Okay, well, let's get this back to Harry Potter talk. Let's get into Muggle Mail now. First one comes from Faye, age 17. She reads, "Hi, I really enjoyed your discussion on the aftermath of the Battle of Hogwarts, but was disappointed by the fact that Snape was hardly mentioned. Who went back for his body? Was a funeral held for him? If so, who would have attended? Where would he be buried? What sort of recognition would he receive later in later years? Just wanted to know what you guys think." So yeah, Snape was a very important part of that whole area of the book. So...
Okay, he got recognition because Harry named one of his kids Albus Severus.
That's true, yeah.
So there's his recognition.
But like maybe some recognition in the school.
Like a special award?
Special award or a nice portrait.
or was Snape's story
being
told?
No, Harry cleared his name.
Yeah,
I think
Snape's story.
J.K. Rowling did say that he would have made sure that people knew Snape's story and that he wasn't as bad as everyone thought he was.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, fact of the matter is Snape like ultimately was heroic, but he still was kind of a, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, I hate to talk bad about the dead, but
yeah.
It's just Snape.
Yeah. What about these questions that she put in here? Who went back for his body? Was a funeral held for him? I hope a very nice funeral was held for him. Although, you know, we were talking about all these different people who died. You know, did they do just one big funeral or what?
I'm sure there was some kind of great...
A mass
there was,
funeral?
Well, not, yeah. Maybe not a funeral, but I'm sure there was like a large memorial service. But I don't know. I would think that people's individual families would handle their funerals. And I mean, obviously Snape has no family, so I don't know.
You know how sometimes people get buried with like some of their favorite things? What do you think Snape would get buried with?
Not shampoo.
He'd get buried with
a Snape cast on his iPod.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. The next email is from Andrew, 18, from Nashua, New Hampshire. What's so funny? Nashua. Hey, Mugglecasters, I was wondering what you guys think about Fred's funeral and where and when it would have taken place. And speaking of funerals, instead of including Dumbledore's in the sixth film, could they not merely end the film with a shot of the tomb? I think it would be a simple yet powerful ending. In response to the debate in episode 159, I would have to agree with a point that Eric brought up. Perhaps not a wizarding picture of Voldemort, but something I feel should be done at Hogwarts to remember his example. There is so much to be learned from Voldemort's example, after all. As Dumbledore put it, the next time you have to choose between what is right and what is easy, remember what happened to someone like Cedric Diggory. Remember is the key word. And yes, Voldemort did many terrible things. I don't want to sound grim, but sometimes it takes some terrible things to really bring about change.
Yeah, but I mean, couldn't just learning about him...
I think Cedric Diggory is an example. Like, remembering Cedric Diggory is something that, like, that should be always be, like, they should always, like, you know what I mean? They should have something at Hogwarts dedicated to Cedric Diggory.
Yeah.
And that's going to remind people of the destruction that Voldemort did. Like, Cedric Diggory is a positive example because he was a kid who was taken away in his prime. Whereas if you put up a statue of Voldemort, it's kind of like, you know what I mean? It's like the Diary of Anne Frank. That's what Cedric is in this situation. And Hitler is Voldemort. And you're not going to go to, you know, Germany. You're not going to go erect a statue of Hitler. You know, that's not going to happen. And you get Hogwarts, you can't put up something of Voldemort.
Yeah.
You put up something that can represent that conflict that happened, like Cedric, though.
Yeah, I agree. Me too.
That's what we said last week. I mean, in the debate in particular, we referenced, you know, putting up a picture of Hitler in a synagogue or Osama bin Laden at 9/11 memorials would kind of be the comparison of putting Voldemort up in some form of remembrance at Hogwarts. Yeah. I just thought the really funny thing about this rebuttal was she mentioned that she had to agree with a point that Eric brought up, and Eric wasn't even part of the debate. Just goes to show how much Eric likes to talk.
Yeah. Do you think that people still have a problem saying Voldemort's name?
Nah.
Do you still think that he's referenced as Hugh, but must not be named, or since he's gone now and they no longer fear him?
We've never had a problem saying his name.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, of course.
People in the wizarding world. I think people wouldn't be afraid to. They'd be, they're extremely excited that he's dead, so, and they've, because I think when they said the name, they feared that he would appear.
Yeah. It could also be generational, too. You know? Like, perhaps some people who grew up during Voldemort's reign wouldn't want to say it, but then maybe more progressive people would, and, like, younger people would as well, so.
Yeah. It's sort of like when a really bad thing happens in the world, like, you don't, like, in our world, you don't joke about it, like, 9/11, when that happened.
Yeah.
You don't joke about it, but 10 years later, you don't joke about it, but you sort of start talking about it.
Yeah. Like, yeah, because it's... Time heals all wounds.
Right. So true, Ben.
So true.
Okay, next email. Andrew, I know you said you were joking, but I couldn't resist. It's a bit morbid, but come on, at least I didn't suggest sushi. Bad Micah. So top 10 things that happened to Voldemort's body. Number 10, he was sent to the love room in the Department of Mysteries. We were told he combusted as soon as it was brought in. Brought in.
Why isn't this Ben Shane's top 10 list?
Go ahead, you do it.
I'm just kidding. I'll do it. Number 9. It was sent to Borgin and Burks and sold as human snake. Number 8. He was stuffed and used as a target for aura training.
Nice, I like that.
Number 7. He was buried beside his father with a gravestone that simply said, Tom.
Wow, that's kind of sad.
Ouch. Right. Number 6. He was handed over to centaurs. We're really not sure what happened after that.
Hey now.
Same thing that happened to Umbridge.
Number 5, he was thrown to the Inferi in the cave. Ew. Inferi, are you scared of Inferi, Andrew? Is it Inferi?
A little bit.
Inferi?
I don't know. Inferi. It depends on how Inferi. You interpret it. Yeah.
Number 4, he was reanimated to sing Weasley is Our King while doing the hippogriff. Well, I don't want to see him doing the hippogriff.
Well, he did actually down in Dallas, Texas at Portis 2008.
Oh, that's right, God. Yeah.
Did you guys see a guy who looked like Voldemort?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was at our house.
Yeah, he was at our house. I say our house, like, yeah, if we live together now.
You're my
I'm moving in here. Number 3, his His reanimated corpse was placed in the Aura's office to the constant amusement of Ron. Hermione wouldn't let him bring it home. Number two. They forgot about his body in the broom closet and a blind Filch found it.
Why is he blind?
Years later.
Yeah,
because he got old, dude.
Yeah, but he just goes blind? Okay.
And the number one thing that might have happened to Voldemort's body is Filch mumbled about stupid students and hung Voldemort by his toes in the dungeons.
That was from Myra.
Hope he didn't...
I don't think we ever said her name.
All right. And the last email for the day is actually pretty interesting. And Laura, I almost sent this rebuttal into us, but luckily somebody else did. Says, hi, everybody. Okay, I know that this is completely unoriginal, but I love your show. Listening to MuggleCast is one of the highlights of my week. This week, as I was listening to your podcast, Micah mentioned that Scholastic was coming out with a school edition of Harry Potter. Somebody then proceeded to say that studying the books in school would make them get sick of them. Well, I'm here to tell you that studying HP in school does not make you sick of the books. In fact, it makes you love them even more. The past spring, I was lucky enough to be a part of a senior elective class, AP Harry Potter. We read a book every week of the course and met for 3-hour time slots weekly to discuss the books. Every member of the class had to write a 10-page paper on the books and present to the class about their findings. My paper on food in the series was the basis for our guest MuggleCast podcast this past spring when I recorded for you for your contest with my sister Lindsay. After studying the books in depth for 8 weeks, I can only say that I love them more than ever. There's so much that my class was able to discuss, and there are many details that I never picked up on or never thought about in a certain way that I can now consider in a different light. Kids who get to study these books in school are so lucky. I envy them for getting to read all the books for the first time. You sure rocks, and so do all of you. So, Laura, you actually said this in the show, and I didn't realize it when we were recording, but you had said that people would get bored of the books if they're read in school. Do you really think that? Or were you joking? Or
I don't remember saying that. I think I'm gonna. Yeah, I don't recall.
You
I think
did.
I'm gonna
you
pull,
did.
I'm gonna pull a Ronald Reagan here. I don't recall what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, you did say that, and I was like, "What? Okay. I don't know. Maybe you were talking about something else."
Well, were we debating? Because like,
no.
I don't.
No, we were talking about in the news the school edition of Harry Potter, and you're like, "Oh, kids are gonna get bored of them if they're read in school anyway."
I don't know. I feel like you said it too, though.
I said yeah, but I wasn't listening. I was just like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, so you don't listen when Laura talks? Is that what you're saying?
No. No. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
What happened was Laura was saying, wouldn't it be really weird because our kids are going to read the Harry Potter series, you know, years from now. And
maybe.
Yeah, I remember saying that.
It'll almost be mandatory for them to do it in school. And I think that's, you know, why it came up. And she mentioned that they may not like the series because it's almost force-fed upon them as opposed to, you know, having the option to read it themselves.
Yeah, thank you, Micah. Thank you for remembering what I said. Because I'm clearly clue-free.
But we're going to talk about that a little bit more later in the show.
Yes, we have a debate prepared about
that.
I'm
going to further incriminate myself.
Okay, well, as I said at the beginning of the show, this is our Halloween episode. Did I say that email is from Renee? I don't know if I did, but thank you, Renee, for that. Okay. So we're going to do some Halloween talk for our main discussion this week. Set the mood here first. Okay, that's better. So,
Oh my God.
Every episode we discuss, every Halloween episode, we do some Halloween talk. And Micah thought it would be a good idea to take a look at the things we predicted in episode 61, which was, I guess, our second Halloween episode. We were making predictions about book 7. So I have these clips prepared now, and we're going to listen to a few of them. And we also have a nice one from Laura at the end that we can dig into for a minute. Okay, so we'll go back in time here. We'll listen to this first clip. This was our prediction of why ghosts stay at Hogwarts. Oh, wanting to stay at Hogwarts, that has to be a decision that's up to the headmaster. And I mean, I would think you would really have to have been a great student at the school in order, you know, for Dumbledore or whoever to say, you can stay in my school.
Is it up to Dumbledore, though? Do you really think he has that much control over the school?
The current headmaster?
Peeves is in the school, and it doesn't seem like it's too easy to get rid of him.
Well, that's because Dumbledore wants to stay around.
Dumbledore
won't oust him. They've said that.
Of course, that's true. Yeah,
I know, but I mean, I don't think that Dumbledore can tell a ghost to get out of his school.
Of course he can. He's so powerful.
It's so powerful, it's ridiculous. But, okay.
God, wait for everybody to, like, rain all over my parade there. God.
Laura, you've come a long way since then. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Thanks.
I'm sorry.
So, I guess we didn't really learn more about that in book seven, right?
Not really.
No. Then why was that a prediction?
Well, it was just a discussion.
Well, no, but Joe was saying that we were going to learn more about ghosts, and we never really did.
Okay, well, how about this next question we answered, which was, what happened to the Bloody Baron?
Bloody Baron. How do you guys think the Bloody Baron died?
He got hacked to pieces, considering all the blood on him.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Or he slipped over at the blood factory and banged his head on the ground and died, and then that's why...
Well, whose or what blood do you guys think is on him? It's described as being silvery.
Yeah,
do you think it belongs to
unicorn?
I think it's silvery just because he's a ghost. Yeah. I mean, they're white and transparent. I think the blood's just silvery because of the composition of a ghost's body.
All right, Laura.
Sorry. And the last one, should we do that? What, the impact of the Grey Lady?
Well, yeah, I mean, they kind of go hand in hand together, so we could do that.
Okay. So this is when we discuss the impact of the Grey Lady.
Final house ghost, the Grey Lady from Ravenclaw. We really don't know a whole lot about her. We don't really see her that much in the books. But, Jamie, maybe you know something about this. There are various Grey Lady ghost stories that exist in London. Is that true?
I have heard a few, yeah. Lady Jane Grey was the great-granddaughter of Henry VII, and she reigned as queen, but she was actually uncrowned, and she only reigned for 9 days, which is, you know, absolutely nothing. And then I think she was beheaded at the Tower of London. So, yeah, that's why her ghost is, you know, is reported to haunt it. But she is supposed to haunt other castles as well in different places, haunted places. So, I mean, is there anything there, like, maybe... Maybe the Grey Lady was only at Hogwarts for 9 days, and then she got killed.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe, yeah.
Bit unlikely,
but maybe. And
Dumbledore
felt bad for her, so she was like, come be a house ghost. Yeah. And then...
Well, don't worry.
What about Professor Binns? How did he...
Well, can we stay on top of Grey Lady first?
Yeah, Ben, then...
Not literally, I mean. Yeah.
We just fall through and hit the ground.
So it's possible that Joe took the name from there.
Oh, I'm sure she did.
Yeah, well... There's really no doubt behind that.
And that would probably be the most reasonable explanation.
Yeah, but she's a very mysterious ghost. I think we hear once that she was floating by or something like that, but we don't hear anything about her. Perhaps we'll find out something new in Book 7.
I think she's in Half-Blood Prince, if I remember. They said some ghost went by as Harry was talking to Hagrid about overhearing the conversation between Snape and Dumbledore. She seems to be around it. Kind of interesting times, because they said in the movie for Chamber of Secrets, and I don't know if this was in the books too, it was a scene that was cut out where it's the first time that Harry goes to open Tom Riddle's diary.
Yeah.
And he tells the Grey Lady to get lost.
No, he doesn't, does he? Really?
It's deleted scene.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, it's deleted scene, I see. Sorry.
But, I don't know.
Why would they cut that? I mean, what was in...
So that goes on and on. And
wow.
We were pretty close there. I mean, Jamie in particular saying that we would learn something about her in Book 7.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there's one more thing we discussed about on this episode, and I'll just play it. We're talking about where the final battle would be.
Oh, God.
Here's Laura's thoughts.
Oh, God.
Final battle will take place.
Not at Hogwarts. Oh, my God. No, every bad fan fiction I've ever read in my whole life, they have the final battle take place at Hogwarts, and then, like, first years are out fighting Death Eaters. It's ridiculous. No.
I think it should be at Godric's Hollow.
Yeah, oh, that would be good. Yeah. You guys want a cool... So, Laura, do you regret your statement now, or do you still stand by that?
No, I don't. I mean, she definitely made it fantastic. Like, I completely loved the way she did the final battle. I think the problem was... I admit, I was an ass, okay?
No. I mean,
I mean, it doesn't mean you're wrong, though, because I love the way she did it, too, and I thought it turned out wonderfully, but it doesn't mean you're wrong, because you're saying that every bad fanfiction's like that.
It was
yeah,
true.
It's
she's
true.
Not, she's not calling Book 7 a bad fanfiction. She's not doing no. that.
No, not at all. No, because, like, seriously, these things would literally, like, they had, like, the students, like, uniting in, like, this battle front on the front lawns of Hogwarts, and, like, it was just so cheesy. Like, every single yeah. one of them was the same. So when I thought of the final battle being at Hogwarts, I just imagined these fan fictions, and I was like, oh, God, please don't do it, because wouldn't I thought it was going to be awful, but no.
Wouldn't it be awesome if Joe wrote fan fiction?
She may.
Maybe she does.
Some rejected chapters from Harry Potter show up on Muggle fan.
Wouldn't that be bad if like if she submitted something and it got rejected from someone's yeah. fan fiction site?
Yeah. Well, there was one story actually on Muggle fan fiction, and it pretty much got everything in Deathly Hallows down pat. I mean, all the major plot points, and we rejected it, not because of the plot was bad, obviously, but just because it was poorly written. But still, afterwards, that'd you're like, funny. Crap! I hope that wasn't Joe.
That was like she went in the MuggleNet chat room and was giving theories, but nobody liked them.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Everyone was like, no,
yeah.
You don't know what you're talking about.
And everyone was like, give us the
no,
chat
fail.
Logs. We were like, we don't have those.
I wish we did.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what happened with that. And, you know, in a way, it's almost like, Laura, the directors of the film sort of had the same feelings you did, because they're not having a battle of Hogwarts and Half-Blood Prince just because there's one in DEH. I mean, is that sort of what you're saying, is that it would be repetitive, too? Was that one of your ideas?
Well, no, it wasn't. Well, yeah, I mean, I was kind of talking about how, like, every showdown was sort of taking place at Hogwarts up until that point. So I was at that point hoping that we were going to see something different. I mean, and also you have to remember, I was a huge proponent of something big happening at the Department of Mysteries. So I was really set on the idea of something major happening there. And the okay. thought that like it was going to be Hogwarts instead really upset me. But I'm over it now because I enjoyed it.
Micah, do you want to take the discussion from here?
Sure. Well, I guess we want to stay with the Halloween theme, and it's kind of different than we have in the past couple of years, because we don't really have much of the stories to go on in terms of predicting things and basing it off of past books. But, you know, this is more of a general discussion, I guess. So let's start with, if you had to decide what house you would be in based upon the house ghost, which house would you be in and why?
I think I would be in Nearly Headless Nick's, and I'm kind of just going to base this sort of just on the movie, but it just seems like he's the most definitely one of the nicest ghosts to get along with, and he seems so helpful and pleasant.
Laura,
I'd have to agree.
Or Ben,
I'd have to agree. I think that I don't think you really get to see the you really don't get to develop a relationship with the other ghosts like you do with Nick. You know,
yeah,
he's your boy.
Through Harry's interaction with him.
Well, I mean, I guess also, like, I'm sure the other students developed relationships with their house ghosts. Like, we just didn't see it, obviously, because the books are written from Harry's point of view.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's hard to choose based on a ghost.
I wonder if the ghosts really care to develop relationships with the students, because
they're dead.
Well, they're dead, but, like, you know, they're going to pass through the school, and then they'll never see him again once they graduate.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I'd be all about stalking the Bloody Baron because he's cool. So Slytherin it is.
Elisa?
I don't know. I was going to go with Nearly Headless Nick just because he's like the most lively of the bunch. I just think he's the most fascinating. But now that feels like a really cliche answer. But so I guess I'll go with the Fat Friar because I think he's one of the few that would go with or that would try to form a relationship with the students. So
I maybe
that'd be awesome.
Would have to choose the Bloody Baron, but I mean, nobody's gone for the Grey Lady at all. But I guess that's just because, you know, she's a little bit too far out there. But I'll go with the Bloody Baron. I like that choice.
So do you guys think there is enough of the traditional Halloween characters in the series, such as the ghosts, the ghouls, the goblins, the werewolves, and the vampires? Because it seems like some played a significant role while Joe just managed to fit them in. I mean, they didn't even really play that big of a role in the books. I mean, what do you guys think they added to the series?
I think they just sort of added, yeah.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Well,
but,
Remus
I mean,
is
just
a werewolf.
Like, as a whole, were they trying to sort of set a theme in the books?
I think it just set the atmosphere of the fantasy setting. Like, I don't really see much purpose beyond that. I don't know if that's what you're asking, but
yeah, basically. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
Micah?
Well, yeah. Well, I think what I was trying to get at, though, is it seems like where you have Remus Lupin, who's a werewolf, but then you kind of just have these other ghosts and ghouls, like the ghoul that lived up in the Weasley's attic and the goblins at a Gringotts, and the vampires. They very rarely make an appearance in this series. I agree with Laura that it set the tone, just kind of having them around. They didn't necessarily play a significant role, but it seemed like she took only a few of those and made them important, whereas the others were just kind of scenery. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But why do that? I mean, you have 7 books. Why not make them more important to the central plot?
Well, because you know why. We've read them all now. I mean, it's like maybe around Prisoner of Azkaban, you can argue that, but they're not that important. They don't really need to be.
Yeah, and there's only like so many times that you can make the plot surround some magical creature. Like, it would, I don't know, I think it would be weird if, like, you had, you know, the book with Remus and being a werewolf, and then, like, in the next book you had someone being a vampire, and the book after that, you know, I think it would get old.
All right.
Plus,
yeah, I agree. I mean, if anyone could pull it off, it'd be Joe, but really, I think if there'd been too much of that, it just turned into a freak circus. And it would deter from the writing and from the plot anyway if she'd purposely went out of her way to incorporate that.
Yeah. And the uniqueness that is Harry Potter, because it would be very generic to have a story about vampires and stuff. And by keeping these people minor, it's not really a generic story of vampires or werewolves. I think she balanced it perfectly.
Well, speaking of vampires, one of the main theories that was out there throughout the course of the entire series was that Snape was a vampire. And this theory was obviously absolutely crushed by J.K. Rowling. And I just want to know, I guess maybe even from Elisa, having read a ton of fan fiction, you know, what did you think when it was finally put to rest? Because I'm sure there were probably hundreds, if not thousands, of stories based solely on this.
Yeah, no, there definitely were. Though, to be completely honest, I was never quite sure where that came from. Because a lot of the stories, anyway, the reasons that they use for, or the motive, rather, that they use for Snape being a vampire seemed a little arbitrary. I mean, they made for great stories, but I didn't find that much canon to support it. A lot of the times they would sort of use the whole Remus Lupin being a werewolf thing as the basis for the plot. And, you know, Snape being a vampire, him being a werewolf, and the whole vampire werewolf feud. And so, like, that was usually, from a fanfic perspective, what, you know, how it came about. But in terms of it being a legitimate theory of him being a vampire, I wasn't quite certain where that came from.
I mean, did any of it come from, there are a couple times in the series that she refers to him as being bat-like or having qualities.
Well, let's not forget even that Sorcerer's Stone Anniversary Edition, you know, she described him as somewhat looking like a vampire, but that is Snape. It's just his appearance.
Okay. One of the other theories that was out there that I know we spent a lot of time talking about, and Laura in particular, because of her love, because of your love of the Department of Mysteries. Halloween being the day where the veil between the world of the living and the dead is at its thinnest, and its role in Deathly Hallows. We did spend a lot of time talking about this in past shows, and, you know, it was kind of disappointing because it really ended up having the veil itself, actually, very little impact on the final book.
Yeah, it like next to nothing. I was so disappointed. Anyway, I remember discussing this. Didn't we do like a 3-part series?
We probably did. Yeah,
I know. On the Department of Mysteries. Yeah. And I remember we spent a long time talking about that. And I remember it was because someone was theorizing that maybe Voldemort was going to fall on Halloween, that like it would go down on the same day it all started.
Yeah, because there was
And I forget whose idea that was.
I don't know, but there were I had brought up a theory saying there was something related to Halloween where some veil was always the thinnest. Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember we were talking about that?
Well, yeah, that's like always been sort of a theory that like the bridge between like the world of the living and the dead is like, you know, at its shortest or at its thinnest on Halloween.
Like you could theoretically like hear through it better maybe or look
or it would allow people to cross over, I guess. I think that was our and at this point did we have the title of the book?
We probably did, and there were so many different like that's things where related to Hollows at the time that we were analyzing that probably did have something to do with it as well.
And I feel like we heard Hollows and then we like thought, oh, Halloween, you know?
Right.
All Hollows. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where it was coming from.
Yeah, that was it. That was exactly it, yeah. So
we such a different, like, where does this crap come from? Like, where did we get this crap?
Well, not only that, and if you want to go crazy, we spent that whole episode, Laura, I think it was you, me, and Eric, talking about the Antipode and Opali, the dragon, because we thought
the
dragon on the cover of the deluxe edition, and that means that, I don't even know, we were talking about that Deathly Hallows symbol being, like, reversing worlds or going through time or different ends of the earth. We were all
what happened was that Eric was saying that the scenery on that cover looked like New Zealand. I wonder why.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, maybe they go to New Zealand.
But like, you gotta remember, that's all we had to work with. So we had to discuss and pick apart every little pixel of those covers.
I miss that though. Those days were really fun because we really had no clue what was going on.
yeah. So let's move along. Do you think J.K. Rowling intentionally made significant events happen in the series on Halloween after the Potter's death? Micah, could you elaborate a little more?
Do you want me to answer it or you want me to elaborate?
Well, I think that makes sense because, you know, it's All Hallows Eve. It's like kind of, isn't it when the spirits come out of hell or something like that? Isn't that what it is? So, I mean, if all evilness is coming out, then some bad stuff has to happen.
Yeah. Well, it also just sets a very interesting theme. I think it's part of Joe's really descriptive writing. You get feeling out of knowing that all this stuff is occurring on Halloween, because we all know what Halloween feels like, that sort of spirit.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think after the Potter's death, she chose to really make that a significant date in the series, because if you look at all the different events, I mean, what happens on Halloween in the first book is that's when the trio really forms. It's when they come together to face the troll. And from that point on, at least through, I think it's like the first four books, there are significant events that take place on Halloween.
Yeah, I was just trying to remember, like, I don't know, I don't want to like backtrack too much, but like book one, it's the troll. And then book two, Death Day Party / whatever.
They find the first attack. Yeah.
Book three, Sirius broke into the castle. Book four,
we had a main
Harry...
discussion on this, didn't we?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, we did. I think we went over like everything that had happened. I think this was our first Halloween episode, actually, that we went over all the stuff that happened on Halloween. That is
what
crazy.
Was Goblet of Fire, that was the actual...
Harry was chosen, I think.
Right.
From the Goblet.
And then nothing happened the last three books, I don't think.
Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire?
Oh, we're joined by Michael Gambon, everybody.
Yeah.
I guess we could talk briefly about... it's obviously Rowling's favorite holiday. It's a day of both great triumph and tragedy for the wizarding world. I guess the only real thing to say about that is just that it was the day that Voldemort met his match in Harry Potter. But it was also a day of great tragedy because both Harry's parents were killed. That was kind of the only point that I was trying to make there.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And actually, somebody brought this up just before, but should Voldemort have fallen on October 31st? You know, would that have brought the story full circle better than what happened?
I think it was already full circle enough with Remus and Tonks' kid losing Remus and Tonks. So I think it would have been cool, but I don't know if it'd be necessary. But I guess when you think about all the events that did happen on Halloween, it would have been pretty fitting. Although, if you think about it, let's see, school had started when they were still searching for the Horcruxes. So, do you think with the Harry Potter timeline in mind,
you wouldn't have been able to have a battle at Hogwarts, really, in the way that she wrote it, if you waited till Halloween, I don't think.
When did this happen exactly? Was it before Halloween?
Yeah, I think so.
Technically. No, wait, the final battle at Hogwarts?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in, like, June. Like, it was towards the end of the school year, I think.
Right, so they had already passed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's what I'm thinking, is that it would have, like, the book started in, like, what, July?
Right.
Probably, it would have been it would have been a few months long.
Yeah,
the
it would have had to have been.
Book. Yeah.
It would have had to have spanned two Halloweens in order for it to get to where we wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would have passed the first Halloween where they were in the forest or something, and then the second one would have had to extend beyond the Battle of Hogwarts for it to actually be worth anything. But that's what I'm saying. I don't think that it would have worked well for her to have to write it that way. It didn't make sense.
Okay, so I guess we're going to get into the fun portion of the discussion now. If you had to dress up as a Harry Potter character for Halloween, who would it be? I've already done it. I've been Harry.
Dork.
How about you guys? Ben, who would you be if you had to dress up as a character for Halloween, Harry Potter character for Halloween?
Rubeus Hagrid.
You would fit the character well.
Thanks, Andrew, because I'm a giant. I'm larger than life.
I didn't mean it that way. I meant you're tall. That's all I meant.
This is why I don't come on, Andrew.
Oh my gosh.
MuggleCast 160, larger than life. Should be a shit ton. Micah, how about you if you had to be one character? Actually, let me guess. I would say you would want to be
Hermione.
I would guess you'd want to be Snape.
Yeah, that might not be a bad character. I'm trying to think of, like, a really obscure character that would kind of fit.
Dawlish.
Dawlish. I don't know.
Well, here, we'll get back to you in a second. Lauren, Elisa, how do you guys? You think about it, though, Micah.
I don't know. I mean, I can't think of anything, but I will confess, I did dress up as Hermione for Halloween in fifth grade.
Nice!
Oh, well, so you would want to... Yeah. Wow, fifth grade.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nobody was really dressing up like Harry Potter back then.
I was a... Like,
I think Laura's a trendsetter, I think.
Yeah, that's
right. She broke the mold.
That's right.
You should have copyrighted the costume design before WB got to it.
Yeah, really? What was I thinking? My dumb 11-year-old self. Like,
aww.
Elisa, how about you? I can see you dressing up as Tonks.
No.
Tonks?
Bellatrix.
Yeah. Oh, Bellatrix.
Bellatrix? Ouch.
What?
It's not an insult. It's just that.
She's a badass.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to go with Hedwig. No one ever thinks of Hedwig.
I'm going to be a Nimbus 2000.
And then we would, like... And then we would have to blow you up.
Yeah, I mean, he's nothing more than a
blasphemy.
Puff of feathers. Or she.
No.
Nothing more than a puff of feathers.
Actually, Thompson, I have a proposition for you.
Uh-oh.
Who's Thompson?
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and if I wasn't going to be Hedwig, I would totally want to be Firenze. So, you know how, like, those old-fashioned horse outfits? Like, would you please do me the honor of being my backside? Would you please do that for me?
Yeah, you know, I'll just go ahead and go book a flight right now and fly out to England. It'll be fun. We'll, like, walk around the Oxford campus.
Yes, seriously. Win. Come on out. Yeah, I think that would totally work. Let's do it.
Maybe we'll run into Emma Watson, and yeah, she'll be really
probably would.
Her. Yeah.
Scare the living daylights out of her.
Girl talk on MuggleCast. All right, well, that's our Halloween main discussion for now. Hopefully everyone join it. We'll be next year grasping for even more straws unless J.K. Rowling reveals something interesting and Beetle the Bard, maybe. When it comes to a Halloween discussion, I mean. Next up, we have an interesting what if, and we haven't done this in a while. And when Mike originally suggested it, I wasn't sure if it would offend people, but I don't think it's not offensive. Mike, go ahead. Why don't you introduce it?
Okay. Well, the what if segment for this week is what if J.K. Rowling were a man? And I guess
I'm so offended.
The best two people to ask about this, I really did think, were Laura and Elisa, because I'm interested what their take would be if she were actually a man, and this was a man who was writing the series. Do you think there would be a different reaction to it? Do you think that the sales would have been different, and maybe she would have had a little bit more success early on in her career? When the series first came out?
How much more success can you ask for?
We all know it didn't take off the way that it obviously blossomed into later on, years later.
But I think that's just being an author, though. I mean, go to any famous author, most of them didn't take off overnight. I don't know that it's gender specific.
Well, didn't they specifically have her name be changed to J.K. Right. Rowling?
Yes,
on
they
the
did because
book covers?
Yeah. Yeah, they did that because they thought that what was it? They don't think that there's some
women
study,
authors
I don't
would
know.
Sell.
Well, no, that's not it. They think that women readers don't discriminate based on sex, but that male readers aren't likely to pick up books by female authors.
Right.
And so that's why they did it. But, I mean, these are also the same people who changed the name of the first book in the U.S. because they thought American kids were too dumb to know what a philosopher was.
I was too dumb to know what a sorcerer was. Should have just kept it. It would have been the same thing. I think the biggest difference would be the writing style, don't you think? Because there are differences between a man writing and a woman writing. And I think J.K. Rowling's extremely clever writing style and her witty remarks from Dumbledore and all that. I think it's from J.K. Rowling's feminine qualities. You know what I mean? Or am I way off?
Yeah. Here? Well, no. I mean, I think there's something to be said for that fact, just because, like, if she were a man, she would obviously be a completely different person.
Yeah.
So, I mean, clearly the perspective would be different.
Yeah. I don't think you would have as many powerful female characters, probably, as you do in this series. I mean, you look across the board, whether it's Hermione or Molly, or even Umbridge and Bellatrix. They're very, very powerful. Ginny, too. I don't know that you would have that in a book that was written by a man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It depends. I mean, some men do write very powerful female characters. Just depends on the guy, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm tempted to speculate on a whole host of things that might have been different, including what Micah was saying about strong female characters. But honestly, I feel like it wouldn't make much difference at all. And I hate using such a loaded word, but I feel like feminism is about equality, not being better or being worse or even different intellectually, just equal. So I don't think it'd really matter. I don't feel like the character she created or the plot she created or the atmosphere or the level of creativity, I don't think any of that is gender specific. And I think the books would have been just as good and had all the same positives or negatives she were a
That's
man.
That's what I learned in my sociology class at school, was that in society we tend to think, like, we tend to associate gender roles, like, you know, men are better at fixing cars or women are better at doing this thing, when the actual studies indicate that it's completely the opposite way, that it's that gender doesn't matter.
Right.
Doesn't affect the quality of work.
Yeah. I think the only time it matters is in perception.
But don't they say perception is reality?
That's true. I disagree, though.
J.K. Rowling has always admitted that she's been shy. She was very shy, as an author back in the 90s, and she still kind of is now. Do you think that would have changed at all? I mean, this is a tricky thing to step around because, you know, you don't want to come off like you're sexist or anything.
No, but, I don't think so.
Only women are shy, which is obviously not the case. I mean, look at Ben.
Stop insulting my gender. Anyway, I'm just kidding, Ben. Here's what I think. If we're like taking this and like we're assuming, right, that it's exactly her, like same person, just in a male body, right? Like that's what we're saying.
But then it's not her anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Like same personality, like same everything, like carbon copied, but male. Okay.
I don't know. How exactly should we put it, Mike? Like, what are we exactly talking about?
Well, I think we've addressed some of the things. We've definitely talked about some of the things so far. I mean, in terms of her writing style, in terms of, you know, how the readers would choose to accept her or not accept her, or maybe even, you know, would she be a more aggressive person? You know, would she be a little bit more arrogant? I mean, not that she's definitely not an arrogant person. You mentioned that she's very shy and reserved, but, you know, if you lend that quality to, or rather, if you change the gender, does that change completely? I mean, is she somebody that then doesn't donate to charity or doesn't, you know, do some of the things that J.K. Rowling has been known to do?
I don't know. I mean, just like, one of my favorite authors, Michael Connelly, is extremely shy. I mean, you see this guy interviewed on the news and he's like in shock. Like, you can tell he's completely confused by the idea that people like want to talk to him. And I like it because it's very like humbling and you feel like that person actually deserves to be where they are. But no, I don't think that shyness or any other personality trait like that is gender specific. And I mean, I think assuming like what I was saying earlier, if we're just saying that she's the same exact person, just with a different gender, then I don't think anything would change. But at the same time, I do think that there are like, I mean, I personally feel like if like I had been born male, I wouldn't be the same person. I mean, it's like I would probably have some things that were different about me. So, yeah, but for the sake of the argument,
society,
like I was assuming,
society conditions you though,
right?
When you're born male, your crib, the sheets have to be blue. When you're a female, the sheets have to be pink. And girls play with dolls, and boys play with action figures. So
I played with Tonka trucks. That's just me though.
Yeah, but you're weird.
Thanks, Ben.
It's good to be back.
It's great to have you back.
All right, so is this what we've come up with? So if J.K. Rowling were a man, there really wouldn't be many differences.
I just think you can't tell because it's all like everything was timing. You know what I mean? That's why Joe was successful is because all the pieces fell into place in the right way. And you don't know that if she was a man, that all the pieces would have fell the exact same way because her being a man completely changes who she is as a person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if you identify as being female and you identify as being male, you know what I mean? Clearly you're going to be different. So who knows if the book would have even been published to begin with if it was male. Or it could have been even more popular. Who knows?
Yeah.
Or it could have been Aragorn.
I think there would be changes in personality.
I mean, it's a very dicey subject. And, you know, like you said at the beginning, and, you know, obviously we're just trying to come up with some sort of ideas over a very messed up topic.
It's not messed up. It's a fun topic. We're shock jocks.
All right. Well, it is time for our debate segment this week, and I'd like to thank all of you for coming here today, and I'll ask the audience to please be quiet during the debate, except for this time when we welcome in our two sides to argue whether the Harry Potter series or one of the seven books should be made mandatory reading in U.S. public schools. On the side arguing that they should be made mandatory, are Ben Shane and Alisa Monfort. On the side arguing that they should not be made mandatory are Andrew Sims and Laura Thompson. Each side will have 2 minutes to make their case, followed by a 1 minute rebuttal period. Ben and Elisa, you go first. You have 2 minutes, and your time starts now.
Well, my friends, I would just like to say that the impact that Harry Potter has on literacy is absolutely undeniable. And I have never met a single person who's read Harry Potter and said, man, I wish I never had done that. And the fact of the matter remains is that you continue to hear success story after success story of people who have read Harry Potter and gone on to read other things. And Harry Potter sparked their interest in reading. And it's been proven through so many, you know, when we're at the end of these podcasts, doing these events, we'll talk to parents of kids who say, you know, my child didn't read before Harry Potter, and now it's helped them, you know, become passionate about learning and passionate about education. And I think that if the Harry Potter books were made mandatory, that it would become, you know, you're going to spread that education and you're going to make that, you know, something that's important to these kids. And Harry Potter is a great hook to suck them in. Elisa, do you have anything to add?
I just want to say that I agree completely, and I actually found a newspaper article on thisislondon.com talking about Robert Mellor's primary school, which is in a deprived area, has jumped from the bottom 25% of schools in the UK to just outside the top 5% over the last 3 years alone, after deciding to incorporate the Harry Potter books into their curriculum and making it mandatory reading in their English classes. So that's hard evidence of what Ben was just saying. And especially in the United States, where we rank number 18 on literacy rates in the whole world, with countries like Moldova and Lithuania being ranked higher than us, I think it's extremely important to make literacy and the Harry Potter books mandatory reading and a higher priority in our education system.
It is all about education, my friends.
All right. Your time is up.
Yeah, 40 million adults in the U.S.
Laura,
are functionally illiterate.
Okay.
Good, Laura.
So
I said no
students...
clapping by the audience.
This
only
better not
when the
cost
candidates
me time.
Entered. No, okay. Your 2 minutes will start now, but please refrain the audience from clapping in your favor. I'll have none of
all
that
right.
In my debate hall.
Okay. Well, thank you for having us here tonight, Mike. Okay,
good. So.
Mr.
So.
Sims, stop making right. Hand gestures to the crowd.
Good, we're done. Good.
Okay. So, first point. Students are notorious for hating books they're forced to read in school. One of the reasons that we all love Harry Potter so much is because we're allowed to find it at our own pace, as opposed to being forced to have a certain amount of chapters read by a certain time. Why do that to kids? Why would we possibly want to destroy the magic that we've gotten from Harry Potter by making it something mandatory? Furthermore, it's great and all if some schools are involving Harry Potter in their curriculum, but there are a number of ignorant people out there who would be adverse to allowing their children to participate in classes in which Harry Potter was being taught. And I don't sympathize with these people, but rather, I don't think schools should have to deal with the kind of distraction that could arise from several students refusing to take part in classroom activities. Like, think of Laura Mallory, seriously. And think about where I live. People would definitely do it. Furthermore, like, I'm thinking of Chronicles of Narnia. You couldn't possibly teach all of the Chronicles of Narnia in school. So they picked the first and most popular book and made everybody read it 5 million times, to the point where no one wanted to read it anymore. And I fear that this would also happen with Harry Potter. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, you know, there's something about making sure that students read a book. Once you read a book, you suddenly it's not as fun for you to read that book. And like Laura was saying, this would just spark a whole bunch of new debates over whether it would start, you know, fights in schools with parents versus, you know, the administrators saying, oh, you shouldn't allow my kid shouldn't be reading this. I don't want them to be reading this. It's sort of like with the flag, the American flag, that one line, one nation under God, that sparked a whole thing because schools were making them say one nation under God. And, oh, well, you know, I'm atheist or support a different religion. So that's why it would just cause too much of an uproar. It's better off with people just simply reading it on their own time in a relaxing environment.
All right. Ben and Elisa, you have 1 minute rebuttal time.
All right. Well, first of all, I'd like to point out that education is the value that we are saying that we should win on, because education is the most important thing by far. And like I said, before I read the Harry Potter books, I absolutely hated them. I didn't think that I heard all about them and I hated all the hype about it. And then when I actually took the opportunity to read it, I loved it. And I think if you made people read these books, if it was, it can spark their interest in reading, and that'll be the most important. On to your point about how the controversy that it would cause of having the books in classrooms. Fact of the matter is, they're just books. They encourage children to read. The controversy would be more than worth it, because education outweighs any controversy that could possibly be brought up. Not only that, Uncle Tom's Cabin, Huckleberry Finn are two books that are read a lot of times in classrooms, even though they may cause some controversy. It's like when a teacher shows a rated R movie, or a movie that's, you know, rated R or something in a class. They just have to get the permission slip signed by the parents. It'll be fine. If kids can't participate, that's fine. That's their loss. But education wins here. Period.
Laura, you want to start again?
All right.
Sure.
Andrew and Laura, you have a minute for rebuttal.
Okay, it's not that we don't think that Harry Potter has educational merit, because we do. But the problem is, Harry Potter has been such an integral part in our lives, and it has allowed us to grow so much as people and have so many great experiences. And I would frankly hate to see for my children to bring this book home from school one day and be like, oh, I have to read this dumb Harry Potter book because my teacher's making me do it. I want my kids to be able to pick up those books and find the same magic that I found in them. And I didn't find that by being forced to read it.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's
30
it's,
seconds.
People can, you just cannot enjoy a story when you're being forced to read it. And if parents, like Ben was saying, that if your parents, you know, sign a permission slip or sign something saying that they can't read this book, that's just not acceptable. Because then those kids are losing out on an education when they all could be reading a book that they agree on.
That concludes our debate for this evening.
Micah, who do you think won?
Well, this is a very interesting topic. I'm not going to call it my Inquisition, as Eric did last week, and spend a lot of time discussing it. I think both sides raised very good points. The one thing that I was a little bit concerned about, and obviously you do have to base your opinion strongly on your own experiences, but worrying a little bit about your own personal experience with the series, I thought you can't really use that as a basis for the future generations, because they're not going to have the same experience. They're not going to go through the midnight release parties or sort of the magic surrounding the series as a whole. It's just not going to happen, no matter how you try and recreate it for them. But another point that I didn't hear brought up was, from either side, was that these books could be read before your children even get to school. So if you're worried about, you know, preserving the magic of the series, and just like with a lot of other fantasy series, certainly one thing that could be done was introducing the books to them before they would have to encounter them in school.
But to enjoy it fully, I think you need to read it at at least middle school.
Well, I think the problem is that you're gonna have a lot. I think you're gonna have a lot of people. The fact of the matter is, if it's mandated that they have to read it, then you're going to have a lot more people who actually do read it, and you could gain more interest in the series, because mm-hmm. there may be some kids who never would have read it unless it was assigned in English.
Right, I agree.
Right.
And I think little kids get turned off by the size of the books. My brother's an example of that. I'm sure, I know that's not everyone, but people look at some of the size of these books and like, I can't read all that, because they're used to these books where the print is larger and there's just less pages. I mean,
yeah. Well, and I think the other point that was brought up that was strong was the, you know, controversial topics that shouldn't be a reason why that it's left out of a curriculum. You know, it's whether it's Uncle Tom's Cabin or even the Diary of Anne Frank would be another example. Not wanting to delve into the whole issue of the Holocaust, and I mean, there's so many different books that you could go through that have those sort of racial undertones or some sort of controversial issue attached to them that you don't want kids' minds being affected by that. This, I guess, is more of a religious issue than anything else. But I still don't think that that's a reason to keep it out of children's hands and being taught, because there's so many things within the series itself, I think, that can be taught and are being taught even today at a lot of different colleges and universities. So if I had to make a decision, even, you know, I'm trying to stay nonpartisan as you know, the media always does. And, you know, that was a bad attempt at a joke, but
well, good point. Mike, you brought up about points.
I would have to say that it should be, not the series as a whole, but, you know, one of the books possibly mandated, for kids to read, and then leave it up to the kids.
Sure.
The children, do you want to explore it further? And then that's your choice.
That's a good middle ground.
All right. Well, that does it for our debate, and that actually wraps up our show for this wonderful 160 milestone.
And let me just say, I didn't agree with anything I said. I was
me too.
Arguing.
Yeah,
because I know people are going to be like, Laura, you hate education.
I said I would have to side with you and Elisa, based on the debate.
I think I'm undefeated in these things.
But I'm sure that there's plenty of stuff that people are going to send in, both about the debate and if J.K. Rowling were a man. So
definitely.
I just think that the point is that education shall overcome everything.
Yeah.
And we need education.
We shall overcome education.
Alrighty.
It's been a great show. Happy Halloween, everyone. Happy Election
Day. Happy Halloween.
Vote no on Proposition 8. Ben, I hope you've enjoyed your time in the MuggleCast studio.
Yeah, thanks for welcoming me back with open arms, everybody. Laura.
Always been.
It's been great. Lisa, it's been great. Micah.
Way to remember
better.
Your co-host names.
It's good to be a member of the senior staff now with you, Ben. I can't say enough
right
about
up there. He's on the same level.
Your endorsement of, you know, my staff.
Strongly supports the decision.
First senior staff, next Tannenbaum, 16. 2016. I'm running this campaign.
Well, Ben and I have to go because we're actually going to go to Wizard Rock Show.
It's a
Potter Day
for us.
I fell
in love with a girl at the Warrock Show.
We're going
Wizard Rock with a W. Thank you very much. Warrock.
We're going to go see the Remus Lupins and Ministry of Magic.
Yes. Is that the crazy Voldemort dude?
It is. It is. So we're looking forward to it.
He's not crazy. He's actually quite a nice guy, Micah. But...
Yeah, he's cool.
I make crazy in a good way, you know, like a cool, hip kind of way.
All right. Well, if you would like to send something to our P.O. Box, Ben. Oh, no. Sorry, Laura. What's the P.O. Box?
P.O. Box 223 Matters Gate. Oh, wait.
Oh, my gosh. It's P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia 30028.
You can also use the MuggleCast hotline to give us a call. If you're in the United States, you can dial 1-218-20-MAGIC. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-8144-0677. And if you're in Australia, you can dial 02-8003-5668. Or your Skype the username MuggleCast. But remember, no matter how you call us, just remember to keep your message under 60 seconds and eliminate as much background noise as possible. And don't forget, you can also visit MuggleNet.com/feedback to use our feedback form, since we could never get the MuggleCast one working properly.
I don't know why.
Yeah, it's weird. We gave up. So
it just broke out of the blue, didn't it?
Yeah. There's people on the staff. Mike, you get that working. You're senior staff now.
All right.
Responsible.
Where's David?
All right. I think that wraps up the show.
That's a wrap.
And don't forget the community outlets, but you all know them. The MySpace, Facebook.
Frapper, Last Forum, Forums, Fan List.
Follow us on Twitter.
Andrew trying to get Ben so on Twitter. Excited for tonight. He's going to go to the Warrock Show.
I'm going
to
tweet that right now. So excited for tonight.
Laura, are you coming out for the Warrock Show?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go down to BWI as soon as I finish here, and I'll be there in four hours.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Once again,
so wrap it up.
I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Ben Shane.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
And I'm Elisa Montfort.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you next time for episode 161. Bye-bye.
MuggleCast 160 is in the can.
That's what Leo said, right? Micah, what's in the news this week? Hold on, that was bad. That was
lay it on me, Micah.
That's what she said.
Okay, well, that's all. Do you think of anything?
No. Snape. Snape's greasy. I'm having a good time in the MuggleCast news studio. Actually, that's in New York. I want to go visit the news center. Micah, do you have a sweet setup?
I have a headset and a MacBook. It's not that exciting.
Oh, damn.
I don't get, you know, the layout that Andrew does with the...
Andrew has an announcement to make. Andrew, go ahead and tell him.
What?
Andrew's going to be buying everybody soundboards and microphones. <That's fantastic. laughs> They're in the mail, so...
You'll see them soon.
Yeah.
Okay, this last blooper requires a brief setup. We recorded the episode successfully, and the reason that this show was delayed was because we accidentally lost Elisa's audio. So she had to re-record her voice. So I don't know if any of you could tell, but she actually wasn't... when she spoke in this episode, she wasn't speaking live. She was when we recorded, but we lost her recording, so she had to re-record everything that she said. So this is the little message she attached to the end of her audio file after she finished recording and heard the final goodbye on the show. Hope you enjoy.
Yes! I'm done! Oh, and a cracker. Oh my god, that was painful. Oh god. God bless you, Andrew. I don't know if there's another human being on this planet that could make me do that. That was ridiculous. Okay. Anyway, this is completely unrelated to the show, so I'm ending this now. Bye!